This is a Pinball News production.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming out. I hope everybody's enjoying the expo. I assume everyone's enjoying the expo. All right. And thanks for coming out. I mean, part of what makes the expo such a huge success is all the people who come and attend. Without you, it would be a big, lonely, yet beautiful room. So today, Tyler and I are here to talk to you about playfields, tips, tricks, hints, and secrets. We kind of realized as we got into this process of putting this presentation together that we could probably talk for about 4.5 or 5 hours on all the different things that you can do with a playfield. So we had to distill a few things down, and we had to eliminate a few things just in the interest of time. However, we're going to cover a pretty broad variety of topics. And afterwards, over at the hall or here, if you have any additional questions or there's something we didn't cover, you need us to expound on it, please feel free to approach us and ask. And during the presentation, please feel free to raise your hand if you have any questions. And also after, given that Ron's not giving me this in the back, we'll have a few more questions as well. So we're going to just jump right in. And the first thing you're going to do with the playfield is depopulate it. Here's some of the things you're going to need. It's pretty straightforward. Nothing esoteric. We use some organizational devices that are pretty high-tech, plastic bags and these bins. And these are really, 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 really helpful and useful for keeping everything separated and organized in the process of going through your playfield. A Sharpie, a camera, very important. Have a camera. Post wrench, that's this little guy, especially if you're doing any of the later 70s games and some of the 60s games that Gottlieb did. With the posts that have the little cap nut, this thing will save your life. So invest in one. There's like $5 from Pinball Resource. Soldering iron, solder, cutters, needle-nose pliers, and blue painter's tape, which my lovely assistant Tyler is showing you now. So you get all your tools and supplies together. I'll try to stay over here, I guess. When you are depopulating, organization is key. Every screw you take out, keep like screws together. If screws have post cap, you know, if they're post cap screws, put those all in a bag together. If they're lane guide screws, keep those all in a bag together. Your apron screws, keep those all in a bag labeled together. Even if they look the same at a glance, and they may be the same, but just play it safe and separate everything and label it. You'll be very happy you did. And take pictures. Oh, also, take off everything. People like to leave the aprons on, take off everything in between. Well, there's tons of dirt and crap and debris from years of use that collect underneath both of those aprons. And as soon as you spend hours going over your playfield and fixing it up, making it look wonderful, you're going to start playing it. And after a couple days, you're going to go, well, what happened? There's all this crap there. So dive in and go all the way. And take pictures. Don't be afraid to take things apart.
Take a lot of pictures.
Take a lot of pictures. And take pictures throughout the whole process. Take pictures before you take anything off. Take them from different angles, from the front, from the back. And also take them as you're taking things off. When you get the plastics off, take some more pictures. When you get a few more things off and things become visible, take some more pictures. Trust me, I don't care how good you think you are, how good your memory is. When it comes time to put it all back together, you'll be going, I know this goes somewhere.
Where does this go?
And go slowly. It's very important. Take your time. Be meticulous. After all, this is your pinball machine, and we don't want to get cute with it. People are going to come over and play it and look at it, and you want them to look at you with admiration and awe at the work you've done. So go slowly, be patient, and keep organized. And bag and tag, that's the plastic bags. I just can't tell you enough how important that is to keep everything organized when you go back to put it all together. And once you've got everything off the playfield, and I'm not going to go into the details of how to take things off. If you don't know how to use a screwdriver, sit back and enjoy, but I can't help you there. So after you've gotten everything off the playfield, we're going to move over and we're going to start cleaning it. And since Tyler is the expert on cleaning it, I'm going to hand this over to him for this portion.
So now you have everything, your playfield is depopulated, and you want to clean it. A couple things you're going to need, tools and supplies, a clean rag or a towel, some Simple Green, a magic eraser, and a little bit of water. Before you want to start cleaning the playfield, you want to prep it. And there's a couple things you want to do. You want to tape the switches, which is this thing right here. If you don't tape those, you with the blue tape, I have cut my fingers hundreds of thousands of times. Just it's a mess. You start cleaning it, and all of a sudden you got scratches all over your fingers.
Well, right. So, what happens is you have to be too careful because you're trying to avoid gouging yourself that you don't clean it properly.
Yeah, and these corners are really sharp, so we want to protect our fingers. And this is a pin right here. It's basically a nail protruding from the play field. You want to tape that up too so you don't cut yourself. And the rollover wires, which is what's this is right here and this is right here, take a little bit of tape and stick those underneath the play field so when you're cleaning it, it doesn't keep popping out and bother you.
Well, and also the unidirectional ones, you can impale yourself. I see nods, so everyone's done that, I take it. So, yeah.
So, now you want to clean your play field. Take your Simple Green and a rag, and make sure you don't take your Simple Green and start spraying the play field. You don't want all that excess water on the wood. You want to take your Simple Green, spray it into a rag, and then take that rag and start cleaning the play field with that. You want to maybe start from top to bottom or bottom to top, either way. Make sure you get everything. Give it one simple pass and then give it another pass. And on the second pass, be just a little bit more aggressive and start really looking at the nooks and crannies that you are cleaning. Make sure you get everything off.
And don't stop it, too. If it needs a third pass, give it a third
sure.
pass.
A clean play field, I've taken maybe 20 minutes to clean, and a really bad play field, it's taken up to 2 hours to clean. So, it's a variable, but just make sure you get all the dust and all the dirt. There's typically going to be a lot of dirt. Once you get the initial cleaning off, you want to do some deep cleaning, and that's where the magic eraser comes in.
Slide.
You can take this magic eraser. I don't know if anybody's used a magic eraser before, but you take it and you dip it into water, and you squeeze out all the excess water, and then you start using that basically as a nice clean sponge, and it'll take up tons of dirt. If you want to make these last longer, you can cut them into thirds. That way, if you use it like a block like this, you're going to go through it really quick. But if you cut it into thirds, it's going to last a little longer. Make sure you have some water next to you where you can dip it in and take out, dip it, squeeze it really good so you don't have any excess water, because you don't want to have water sitting on top of your wood. It has potential damage. Go nice and slow on this, and periodically you want to keep checking the bottom of your magic eraser. If you keep picking up dirt, that's great, keep going. But if you see any color on the bottom of your magic eraser, that means you're starting to pick up paint. That's where you want to stop.
I mean, any color. If you think your eye got fooled and you saw color, stop.
So, be really diligent about that. Keep cleaning, but stop if you think you're starting to pick up paint.
And a good habit is every time you look at your magic eraser, wipe off what you've just done. Wipe the residue off the play field and then dive back in.
And once you have your play field all clean, you might have some damage inserts, and prior to touching it up, the play field, you want to fix these damage inserts, and Jim is going to tell you how to do that.
Thanks, Tyler.
You're very welcome.
So yeah, I'm sure we've all run into play fields that have all sorts of different damage. Most typical type of damage you see in inserts is they're either recessed, they've sunken down below the play field, which can be a big problem with the ball getting caught in the lip and not rolling truly. Dished inserts, which is where the plastic insert itself is actually concaved a little bit, which also can cause the same problem that affects ball rolling, can actually trap the ball in extreme cases. And falling out, where the insert has just decided it does not want to be mated with the wood anymore. So we'll go through these kinds of damage and what you can do about them. Here's an example of a recessed insert, and you can see right there, you can see the hole, the side of the hole, that the insert has sunken down below the level of the play field. And that's just going to wreak havoc with the ball coming up and trying to roll cleanly over that. It's just not going to work. Dished inserts. Unfortunately, it was hard to get a picture that really showed dishing really well. But this is a picture, and I've actually brought that very play field so I can kind of show you what the process of fixing it. That you can see the dish a little better on this guy. I don't know, is that visible? Can you see how that's kind of dished there? And it actually looks like it's pretty flush with the lip. So this would be more an example. This one's dished a little too, and it's also recessed down in. Now, when they're recessed and dished, we treat them the same way as if they're dished. We don't try to fix the recess and then fix the dish because it's kind of difficult to fix it properly with the recess in it. So yeah, that one didn't work out really well as far as showing the dish, but that's the example we're going to use, and I'll show you how we're going to fix that. And this is an example of an insert falling out, in case anyone's not familiar with what that would look like. The insert's just not in there anymore, and you got to put it back. So first, let's go through insert removal. If you've got a recessed insert and you need to take it out, the best and easiest way is with this guy right here, a heat gun. And what you want to do with a heat gun is, and actually I'll just give you a little demonstration that we're going to hope goes just smooth as silk. You want to start, a good heat gun will have two settings, high and low. You want to start on the low setting, and you won't probably have the advantage of having nothing on your play field, but you want to try to depopulate the area behind it as much as possible so that you don't inadvertently burn things. Got it upside down from where I want it. While trying to remove your inserts. So, sure, that'd be great, Ron. Thank you. And presumably I have the right size socket here, so that would be good. And no, don't worry. We're not going to. You know what, we'll try this. This is the wrong size socket, but let's see what we can do here. You're going to want to start with low heat, and the key thing is to keep the gun moving. So we'll put it on one. No, we're doing this one right here. And the socket's the wrong size, so hopefully I won't break the insert. But what I'm doing is I'm moving the gun around. I'm not just hitting it, because if you just hit it, it'll heat up faster than you'll believe.
And you can melt the plastic.
Yeah, you can melt the plastic. You can burn the wood even. And check it. See that you're getting some heat. If the one setting, that you can even hit it from the front a little bit, but again, don't just sit here like this because you're going to end up damaging the play field. You just want to kind of slowly heat it up. And again, like with anything that you're doing here to get your play field back in shape, patience is kind of the key. You don't want to get impatient and try to save 5-10 minutes or something and end up splitting the wood trying to pound the insert up. And actually, I'm going to go to high heat now because we only have so much time. And that's starting to get kind of nice and hot. But let's see if we can pop it out. But this may not work because I'm kind of hurrying, which you better not do. Do not do what I'm doing. And in my haste, I grabbed the wrong size socket. And unfortunately, I don't have a full set on me. So that's getting kind of warm.
Can maybe use
and now,
the backside of this.
Yeah, looks a little. We'll try that. Sure, we'll try this, and then nope.
No, too big.
So what you want to do when you're taking it out is you just want to here turn it 90 degrees for me this way, so they can kind of see that. So we're just gonna kind of lightly tap it. You don't want to go pounding on it because it will damage the wood. Okay. See there, we got it out. Not too much trouble. And now, unfortunately, no applause, really. Wow. No, but and unfortunately, this was a poor example because this was perfectly flush with the play field, so I didn't need to do it. But for the purposes of demonstration, yeah, great, thanks, Ron. So that's how you remove the insert if you need to take it out, using a heat gun and a socket driver without a socket in that instance. But no, you really do want to try to use a socket that just fits inside because then you can catch the lip of the insert. This area here, because if you pound on this, you can break the insert unless you're enormously talented and careful and patient like I just was. So that's how you get the insert out. Now you're saying, well, Jim, now my play field's missing an insert. What have you done? Well, we're going to show you, now that we showed you how to do this, we're going to show you how to put it back in. And it's pretty simple. You'll need some gel super glue and some tape. And you want to use, he's actually holding up the water thin super glue, but you can't tell from there. So pretend that's gel.
Where's the other one?
We don't have the gel super glue here. That's my fault, just for the record. But that's all you need. And it's actually pretty simple if you follow these steps. I think you remember our falling out example from earlier. The first thing you want to do is put the insert in, no glue, and orient it correctly. Now, in a case like this, it's a little more difficult because there's nothing printed on the insert or there's nothing in the middle of the insert. But when they silkscreen these play fields, the inserts are already in them, and very rarely is everything registered perfectly, and very rarely is the border, this black border, very rarely is that concentric with the insert. So if you're not careful about where you put it back, it'll look kind of funny, and you'll find yourself having to do some extra touch-up or just living with regret. So put that in. Take a piece of blue painter's tape, put it across, rub it really good where the insert is, and make sure it's, you know, a really good stiction right there. And then carefully peel it back, and the insert will, you might have to work it a little bit and jog it up, then the insert will come back. Now you've got the insert registered how you want it, you've got the hole ready to have it put back in. Then all you have to do is drop, what I do is I put four good little drops of the gel super glue inside the wood. You don't put it on the insert. If you put it on the insert, it will come out on top of the play field. So don't. And then you simply fold the tape back over. And when you do this, don't push down on the insert. Roll it over, flatten your tape out, and let the tape, if it has to, suspend the insert perfectly flush, and then just walk away and let the glue dry. And quick drying glue, you come back in half hour or so, it should be good. Even less. I can come back in about 10 minutes, and these are workable. So it's pretty easy, pretty simple steps. You do need a little patience. You do sometimes it's a little frustrating trying to get it to come out, but it will. And then you've fixed any recessed insert problems you have. Now, dished is a little more complicated. And this is, like I said before, this would work for dished and dished recessed inserts. So if a reset's dished, or if it's dished and it's also sunken below the surface of the wood, you can use this method. If it's sunken below the surface of the wood and dished, typically the insert has shrunk to a point where there's a little gap between the wood and the insert. And if that's the case, you're going to want to also use some gel superglue to create a barrier from the water-thin superglue just dripping down underneath your playfield. So you're going to need water-thin superglue, probably have some gel superglue on hand, a level, some Novus, some sandpaper, 200 through 600 at least, and if you have 800, even better, some clean rag and towels. And so, okay, here's our example of a dished insert. And I know you can clearly see that's dished. The first thing you want to do is protect your play field. And it's real easy to do with some blue tape. Blue tape is the best. You can do so much stuff with it. So I've just quickly protected the area around the play field. And now here, and I should back up. After this step, spend an enormous amount of time making sure the play field is level in both the X and Y axes. If it's not, your results will be disastrous. And quite frankly, this is hard to do. And this is fraught with peril. If you're not confident about doing this, don't, period. Because you can cause not irreversible damage, but hard to fix damage, and damage you won't be happy with. But if you've got something like this you can practice on, by all means, knock yourself out and go for it. It's not rocket science. It's not really tough, but super glue is insidious, and it reacts very quickly, so you don't have any margin for error. So at this point, I've got my playfield completely level, and what I'm doing is I'm slowly dripping. You can kind of see it pooling there. Sorry about the photography, too. Not my strong point, especially close-up stuff. It always does that. But you drip it in until you see a slightly averted meniscus. So if you look down level, you see like just a slight bubble coming up. Not much, but just coming up above the level of the play field, like maybe a 64th of an inch. I mean, not much at all. And sometimes what you'll get is there'll be pits in the insert, and the water-thin glue won't flow everywhere. Take a toothpick and just kind of coax it around, and it'll quickly find its way to all the areas. And this is when you're done. You've got a nice pool of super glue. Make sure you're doing this somewhere where this isn't going to get bumped or touched for at least several hours, because if you came up and bumped this right now, Now, super glue would just splash, and that would be disastrous and probably send you inside looking for some kind of alcoholic beverage. So once you get this, just walk away from it for 8 hours at least. Leave it overnight. And, Yes.
Take your, you didn't actually cut round corners in it. I mean, how
I've actually got the very same board right here. This, well, the thing is you don't want, it doesn't have to be there at all if you're really careful. It's just a precautionary measure. If you don't overfill this, it won't spill out. And if it's level, it won't run out one side. So that's why it's very crucial that you make sure it's level. And this is an example. This is the one in the example. And we've let this dry, and we haven't done anything else to it. And you can see that even without having done anything to it, it doesn't look bad. I mean, it's not obviously, you know, got something on top of it or cloudy or milky or all that. But what we do after this is we have a process where we go after it with 220 sandpaper until we get it, trying to get it as level as possible. And then you step up your grits, 400 to 600, until it's perfectly smooth. And it actually almost starts looking like a little disc of glass sitting on top of your insert. From that point, you take your Novus, go 3-2. And, you know, sometimes I'll go 3-2 and I'll look at it and I'll go, you know what, that's not quite good enough. And I'll back up and do the 400, 600 again. So it's a pretty labor-intensive and very, you got to be ready to redo work and back up if you really want it to come out nice, because it's a kind of a trial and error process. Do you have a question? Oh, sorry. And then when you after you've done the Novus 3 and 2 and it's looking good, then I use Brilliant Eyes instead of Novus 1. I think it works a lot better. And then shine it up and it will actually come out looking really, really good. And a good example of this, if you want to see it, is in the Grand Champion game of Gordon Hossie's that we've got out on the floor. There's about 8 large inserts in there that have had this done pretty extensively. It's in the middle row of the wood rails on the left side. And go look, all the lower ones have been done and a lot of the upper ones have been done. And take a look and you'll see what the finished product should look like. So it's time intensive. If your insert's dished, especially in an old game, and typically old games is where you find the dished inserts, there's really no other fix. Even if you do manage to bring it up level, the edges up level, you're still going to have a dish, and it's going to affect the play of the game, and you don't want that. So again, if in the case where you have an insert that's sunken down and you have a gap, you need to use some gel super glue on the inside before you put the water thin super glue in. You want to create a barrier with the gel using a toothpick to maybe kind of work it in. Let that sit for 5 minutes, then come back and do the water thin. And you'll have some really good results. Again, if you can find a practice play field, is the best thing. Yeah, Larry.
So I'm just curious, have you experimented with other materials besides the gel super glue to say don't try and reinvent this? We've experimented with all kinds of different materials.
No, to be honest with you, I experimented till I found something that I thought worked really well. And since scads of free time are not usually in my hopper, if I arrive at something that works, I don't usually experiment a lot. If someone tells me, like, hey, this works really, I'll try it. I mean, and by no means is anything we're telling you here the only way to do it, or as far as I know, even the best way to do it. It's the way we do it, and we found that it works very well. And there may be something, some kind of tap plastic product with some hardener that hardens up real nice and quick and is easier to work with. I haven't explored that yet. But this does work very well. It's just a matter of being very patient, very careful, and meticulous. So, again, go look at the Grand Champion, and you'll see some good examples of how good this can come out. Yes?
The Grand Champion's amazing. You fooled me completely. I didn't know you fixed it. I didn't know everything about a Williams play field of that era.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you. So thank you. I'll pay you after the seminar.
Sorry?
No, they did come out really good. That's why I'm kind of steering people that way. It really, it shows you what you can do with something that really, quite frankly, that game was unplayable because of the inserts. No offense, Gordo.
No, it's
the kind of thing you can't avoid. I mean, the old games, the plastic technology has come a long way since the late 40s and 50s, and that plastic was not very good. And typically it is damaged, so you're going to have to do something rather drastic. And short of putting inserts in there and hand painting what you want on them, which You know, it's okay, but it's not as good. This is the only option I found that's really reasonable.
Okay, well, the question, the water thin super glue you're referring to, is that like ordinary? Yeah.
What we use is it's Zap, and they make a bunch of different viscosities, and the thickest one is what you want for the other part of this, and the thinnest, and you can hear it sloshing in there.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, it's what you want for the dish, and just don't rush. Let this sit for 8 hours at least overnight, but otherwise and you may come out and it may not look like this. It may look all cloudy and milky and opaque and horrible, and you may be starting to plan your journey back here to kill me. But once you start sanding it and polishing it, that all goes away. And there are times too when you'll start doing it, you'll notice there are some gouges and crevices below the surface in what you've just done. Then you just do another pass and fill those in. It'll be undetectable. And again, it's just a matter of patience. So it may take you several days to do this. And you may only be able to do a couple inserts at a time, because getting down and doing this really carefully, suddenly you're over other inserts, and you just really want to just go very carefully. So please go look at the Grand Champion. It's a very good example. And you'll see what kind of results you can get with this technique. So touch up. Now the real reason everyone's here. This I'm going to hand over to Tyler, because my artistic ability is non-existent. My stick figures look like they have birth defects. So I'm going to hand this to Tyler, and he's going to tell you how to make your play field look much, much more beautiful.
All right, so now you have a play field that's nice and clean. All the inserts are all repaired correctly, hopefully. So here's some tools and supplies. Your paint, the paint that I use is acrylic, water-based acrylic. Here's several different kinds. I get the big tube because I use a lot of white. You can get, any tube, from this kind of tube to this. All of them work for me. And remember, with acrylic paint, acrylic dries in 5 to 10 minutes, but it's not a permanent until about 2 weeks. So if you paint something on your play field and you go back and clean it in 7 days, you're going to take off the paint. So remember that. It dries quickly, but it's not permanent for 10 to 14 days. Your brushes, what I like to use, here's my little setup, but typically out of all these brushes, I only use 3 or 4 of them, and that's the ones with the finest tip. And I use those because a lot of time I'm putting back lettering or I'm doing some kind of really intricate work, and you need a fine point brush for that. Primer, we use some primer. I'm going to talk about that in a couple slides later. But we use water-based primer. We have a big can of it, but instead of keep going into that big can, I just put it into a small jar so I can fill into that. It's a lot more accessible and easier. And when you are finished with your touch-up with your acrylic paint, you want to seal the paint into the play field. And for that, we use polyurethane. So one of the hardest factors of doing touch-up for your play field is color matching. And something that is really key that you're probably going to want to use is the Color Mixing Bible. Any book will do, but this book will break down basically. This gives you an example. If you want this type of green, you have your orange, yellow, and that type of green, and you mix it together. These are very useful. Until you get the...
It's got the scads of colors. I mean, anything you want.
Yeah, so if you're not a good color matcher, go ahead and get one of these books, and they're very helpful.
What's the name of the book?
Color Mixing Bible.
By?
I don't have my glasses. I can't tell you. Ian Sidaway. Sidaway.
Price range?
How much?
I'll sell you this one for, let's see, this is...
Check the back cover by the barcode.
Oh, yeah. This is 20,
$24.95 USA dollars.
But that was probably 15 years ago. They might. You know what though? It's so worth it. You can't even believe it. This is like one of the best.
And when you go to Michael's or a store, they're going to have several different kinds of books. Look into the book, see which one you know you relate to the most, and grab that. Experimentation. When you're trying to do your color match, maybe best to practice on another piece of wood instead of going straight to your play field. So you want to, you're trying to get the correct blue down and it's not working, just keep practicing on another piece of wood. And what I do is when I think I have the correct color, I'm mixing it and I'll take it and I have it on my brush and I'll bring it over to the play field and just give it a little swoop and see if that is going to work. But remember with acrylic paints that they dry darker than when you apply it. So remember that. And especially blue. Blue dries 4 or 5 tones darker than when you are applying it. So if you're applying, say, red, and you think you have the perfect color match, and then half an hour you come back and it's 2 tones too dark. So keep that in mind.
Start light and go darker.
Yes. With your play fields, you have to remember that the play fields we work on are pre-1978 play fields. So these play fields have gotten sun damage, they've oxidized, so most of them are not the original color anymore. So your primary colors, red, typically I have to add just a little bit of orange in it to get that correct red color. Blues, I have to add a little bit of green in order to get that correct blue color. And yellows, I have to add just a dash of brown in order to get that oxidized 30, 40-year-old yellow color. Colors like white, you have to add a little bit of yellow and a dash of brown in order to get that color. And then colors I like to work with is black, because you don't need to color match that. And that's basically where I start. When I start going to work on a play field, I grab my black tube and mix it with the water. And instead of taking this and putting it on something and mixing it there, I use it right out of the tube. And one thing I found to help you with the application onto the play field is to get this is water-based, so you are thinning it with water. So you want to get the correct amount of paint and water. And if you do that, your paintbrush can flow like a fountain pen. And that way you're going to get better results doing any lettering or doing perfect circles around the inserts and stuff like that. And I think the correct amount of paint is about 80 to 85% paint and 20 to 15% water. And you'll find that if you put too much water, it's just going to flow right down right on your play field. And then you're going to take a towel and you're going to wipe it off and go, I need more paint. If you use too much paint, when you're trying to do some intricate lettering, it's just not going to flow correctly. So that's another thing you want to experiment on, too, is getting the right amount of paint and water mixed in there. And that'll help everything flow correctly. Let's see. Anybody have any questions at this point?
Do you ever use the acrylic paint pens?
I have never used a pen, no. I always use the, what we got here.
For black, that would probably work pretty well. But when you get into, like, the colors are so
specific that you have to mix to a lot. But for black, it would probably work pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about brushes and close-up work for getting curvilinear lines and stuff.
Fine point brushes. A fine point brush I can get as intricate as I want, you know, and anything circular, I just try to have a steady hand. Put your hand down and use it, you know, to your advantage. If your hand is in an awkward position, you're not going to get the correct flow. You're not going to get a straight line, or if you want a curved line. So make sure your hand's nice and comfortable when you're applying your paint.
And you ever work with magnifiers or anything like that? Yeah. Because sometimes with lettering, you've got to just,
Right, I hear what you're saying. I get down right this close. I get through three. I get a couple inches away and make sure that I'm doing it correctly. And if you say you want to put back some lettering, you might want to take a pencil and draw in the lettering first. And that way you can go over it with your brush, and it helps you guide. Let's see here. Here's a couple examples. As you can see, all the damaged artwork right here.
And with these vertical lines, use common sense. Don't try and paint them in like this. Take your brush and literally dig them in. You know, get that paint inside that little crevice, because what these are is just a little indent into the wood. And here's the finished product. After that.
What's that? Oh, here's another example. Game called Melody. You can see all the damage done right here, all this brown spots all through here. And you can see getting close to the final product there.
Isn't that salmon color a nasty?
Yeah. There's some colors that are really hard to get the correct tone to. When you start getting good at it, you can, and you have the, if you have the paints that you're using, you just got to remember, okay, I'm taking, three wipes of this and one wipe of the blue, mixing it together, and I can continue doing that, but it might be a good idea if you do have the correct color match to maybe make a big batch of it and put that aside, so if you need to go back to it. Yeah, that's a great question. This right here, it probably took a while. Probably took about 6-7 hours. I mean, there's so much work, so much bare spots that a lot of these spots I had to go over 2 or 3 times. You know, when you have little tiny dots that you're repairing, you only need to go over it once, but something like this, you probably have to go over 2 or 3 times.
Do you use the bigger brush in those larger areas?
I do not. I typically, the only time I pull out a bigger brush is when I'm doing touch-up on a cabinet or the head or on a repaint.
Go ahead.
I haven't used any primer. I believe the next slide is going to go into... But 2 slides later, I'll talk about the primer.
A quick question. You said mention about making extra certain colors to fit in your back.
Uh-huh.
Recommendations for storage on that? If you come back and work on it later or so.
We have just a little tiny plastic bin. It's probably like this thick. That's you can seal it. Or I do baby jars. Anything that you can seal it. And sometimes, like if it's in the summer, you might want to spray a little moisture on there and then seal it.
What do you strip the play field with first? You know, I'm referring to any waxes or anything on there prior to. If you just put the acrylic on there, when the fish on.
Yeah, when we're cleaning it, that's we're using the Simple Green,
okay, so
and then the Imagic Eraser after that.
Alright.
Is your approach any different when these are areas that you can see that you're placing and adding to it, but what about when you area that you're looking at a picture to duplicate something that's completely missing?
That's actually an example of that right there.
if you notice the white down in this area, sorry, sorry.
That's okay.
Like this area is down here. I mean, you can see they're gone here. They're not well defined. So he has to go back and, you know, IPDB or some other reference.
Sometimes I'm able to go back, like you said, IPD.org. I can go back and look at other pictures of the play fields. But sometimes I just have to, you know, do what I think looks good because I don't have a reference to it.
Do you have any tips for gradients and things like that?
What do you mean?
Like when you have like dot patterns.
Dot patterns.
That's probably more in a solid state.
Yeah.
Kind of.
We don't really work on that. Okay. Primer. When to apply? On this next, I'm just going to go. Here's a good area when to apply primer. It's a kick-out hole here, as you can see, and it typically keeps kicking out right into this area where it's now the artwork's gone and it's just down to bare wood. So I take a brush and some water-based primer and carefully just cover this area and try and raise it up to the level of what the original artwork is, and then let that dry overnight and do a really light sand so it's nice and smooth, and then go back and paint in the lettering right there. So that's where I use
a really fine sand, like 400 or something like that is what you want to do. And if you don't put the primer in areas like that where it's actually even worn the wood down a little bit, even if you match it perfectly, the edge where it changes the level will cause a shadow and it will pop right out. So it's kind of an important step.
So that's the primer, Plan Pay. The consistent damage on a play field is around the inserts. So even if you say you want to touch up your play field, but there's some areas where there's lettering, you don't feel comfortable doing that. If you can just take your black and put in, repaint the inserts, it'll start popping already. So that's a nice, easy thing to do, and it's very minimal, and it takes one color, black, and you don't have to color match it. With wood stain, you apply that when you have just blank wood. There's no color, it's just the wood. But it's been grooved out either by like flippers or
it's kind of abraded or, you know.
Yeah, and you'll have a certain sheen here, and then where the wood is taken out, it's dull, and then you have another sheen. Well, if you take some wood stain and use a really, really light wood stain, and maybe put sometimes I use my finger, sometimes I'll use a Q-tip, and just dash it on there and use the most minimal amount of wood stain. And again, start light and just put a little bit on there. And at the end, I rub it in with my fingertip.
Don't use any wood filler?
Wood filler?
Don't run into too many situations where it's damaged that badly. I mean, if it's really damaged badly, you want to use something like Bondo, something that's really going to last. But hopefully it hasn't taken too many shots.
Sometimes around the
adhesive,
the mylar, take that off and put on there because the wood was worn down quite a bit.
Right. We're going to talk about that in just a second. Yeah. When you have when you've touched up the whole play field, you want to seal the play field in, clear coat it with polyurethane. This is what we use.
Specific, the areas you've touched up, not the whole play field.
Yeah, not the whole play field, just the areas where I have applied paint. You want to use some polyurethane, and that is kind of the same, basically the same way you go about using acrylic paint. You want to have not too much water, but not too much polyurethane. If you put too much polyurethane on your brush, it's gonna go on really thick, and you're gonna notice that. But if you use not enough
polyurethane and too much water, you're going to go over it, and the first pass is going to look like you put polyurethane on it, but 15 minutes later, you're going to go back, and you can tell that you didn't put any, you put a minimal amount, and you're really not sealing it in. So get about 80% polyurethane, 20% water on your brush, and make sure it's, you know, consistent around your brush tip.
Which level of gloss do you use?
What are we, just clear?
Yeah,
clear gloss?
Yeah, clear gloss.
You actually use the glossy?
Yeah.
Because it works better with the wax.
Water-based, yeah, clear gloss.
Usually you're not putting on so much that it really shouldn't show up anywhere.
What typically happens is when you put your polyurethane on, you're going to see that until you put wax on top of that. And when you put the wax on top of that, it all looks the same. Takes away that glossy, initial glossy look of the polyurethane. So now you have a play field that's touched up. You've polyurethaned it, so it's all sealed in. One quick thing you want to do is pick up the play field on the bottom part of the play field. You pick up the play field, and on the underside of the inserts, you're going to take a Q-tip and a little bit of Simple Green and just clean the inserts. And you're going to have to pull away the light socket because each insert has a light socket. So you pull that away, little Simple Green, clean it, and then put back the light socket.
That's a real simple step that makes a huge difference in how the overall look of the
place. Yeah, and if you use something, you know, a harsh cleaner, you could have some kind of reaction with the plastic. So use something very simple, like Simple Green.
Alcohol too harsh?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, Simple Green. Plastics, you always want to be very careful with what you're using.
And the last thing you're going to do on the play field, at least I do, after it's all touched up, polyurethane, the bottom side of the inserts are clean, you want to wax it. We use some Johnson's Paste Wax, and you take a towel and, yes, this is a dirty towel. Use this wax liberally. You want to do 5 coats. First coat, just, you know, wax on like the Karate Kid, and make sure you get it all over the place. Let it sit for about 10 to 15 minutes. And then you wax off.
You'll see it film over, and you know it's time you can buff it off. The other thing, too, is it's a good idea to go and, like, make little balls of blue tape and stuff them in your light sockets so that the wax doesn't build up, or any opening in the play field, basically. It's a good idea to stuff. Tape works pretty well, or whatever you got that's handy.
Sure. Even a little bit of newspaper, you can just shove in areas that you don't want wax. So you do 5 coats of that, and then after the 5th coat, you want to really inspect the play field because you don't want any excess wax to be on that play field. So you can take a Q-tip that maybe some wax is stuck in the corner. You want to get that out. There's some areas between pins where only a Q-tip could get in there. The point is to get all excess wax off. And when you're done with waxing, then you have a couple more maintenance things that Jim will talk about.
All right. Yeah, we included this stuff mainly. I mean, it's stuff you probably all know, but we would be remiss if we didn't at least bring it up as far as, I mean, we don't want our play field to just look good. We want it to play well. So there's things that you really should do. You should treat it like any other electromechanical part of your machine, and you should clean all the contacts above and below. Tighten all switch stack screws. Replace all lights and rubbers since you got the whole thing apart and you're taking those all off anyway. Remove and clean the shooter assembly. People forget to do that. That's actually, I consider that part of the play field. And replace and repair your light sockets as needed. So a lot of times you get flickery lights or lights that don't work very well. And a lot of people think that incessantly cleaning the inside of the can is going to do it. And that's really not ever the problem. The problem is that the little, you probably can't see this, but there's the little Bakelite piece that separates the can and the bracket or tab dries out over the years and it shrinks. And when it shrinks, this whole thing gets loose. When it gets loose, it doesn't have good continuity. So that's why you sometimes get in there, you circle the tab around, it'll come on, or you twist the can and suddenly the light will come on. But you really want to fix that. And we'll go over how to do that. And what you're going to need are flux, and we use this Kester. It's like a paste flux. It's like $3 or $4 for, you know, this, and this will last you like 3 decades. A Dremel with a wire wheel, or some sandpaper if you don't have a Dremel with a wire wheel, and a soldering iron, and you're off and running. So what you need to do, how much play do I have here? Can I act like an MC? Okay, you want to get your Dremel, and I was going to do a little demonstration, but we're getting kind of pressed for time, because Tyler and I always try to do too much and too little time in these, at these things. But you want to make sure that you clean a small area right where the bracket of the light socket meets the can, and you need to clear off a spot both on the can itself and on this where the little bracket sticks out here. You want to make sure it's very clean so solder can wick to it really easily. You also want to clean with your wire wheel or sandpaper this little contact or button on the back so that it's nice and clean and has a good surface for solder to stick to. So once you've cleaned it with your wire wheel, we're going to take the flux that we talked about earlier. That's what it looks like inside. And I just use a screwdriver. And you can see right here, I just dab a little bit, and I just make sure that the flux is touching both the bracket and the little can of the light right where we cleaned it. It's very important. And then also put a little bit on your bottom contact. When you've done that, we're going to pre-tin the bottom contact. You can see here, I hope you can see here, that there's a little blob of solder on there. And what you do is you lay your soldering iron on there and let it heat up for a second, not a long time. You'll see the flux start to bubble and run. And then just with the iron still on there, add a little bit of solder and then pull both away. And ideally you want to do it with, if you can orient the light socket like this so it doesn't tend to want to run off. And what will happen, the flux will help dissipate the heat over the metal and help the solder wick to the entire surface, which is what you want. Then once you've done that, you just remove the wire from the tab, this little tab that sticks out. And it's a good idea to pre-tin the wire too. Once you take it off, add a little bit of new solder because it just helps the solder flow. It helps the solder flow together with the little bit of solder you put on the bottom contact. And then you want to just heat that solder up and bring your wire in. As soon as you see it start to flow, you know, don't keep heating it because the solder will start running off. Bring that contact in. Use some needle nose pliers because the wire will get really hot, trust me. And let, you know, hold it in place for 2 or 3 seconds, blow on it until it gets cool, pull it off, and you're good. You've got a solid contact now to the inner tab of the where the light socket meets the bottom contact of the light. So now you've done that, we're ready to move on to the more critical, or what fails more often in my opinion, and that's we want to put a nice solder blob, like you see there, or hopefully you can see there, between the can and the bracket. And what you need to do is you need to have your soldering iron so that it's touching both of them at the same time. You want to lay it in there, and again, you'll see fumes and things start to come up from the flux. And yeah, don't inhale that. There's no beneficial effect. And I'm sure it's not good for you. So ventilation's always a good idea. When you see that all start to flow, keep it on there for another second or two because you've got a lot of metal and it's going to sink heat out of your iron. And you need to use a pretty good soldering iron for this too, one that's got plenty of wattage and has a good recovery time. And when you see that, you want to add some solder. Keep your soldering iron there. And you should see the solder, if you've got them both hot, you should see the solder just literally flow to both of them, and it'll actually flow just a little bit underneath. Then pull your iron away and let it sit. And then when you're done, you'll have, this can will no longer turn. It'll have a nice solid solder junction right there, and you'll have a nice solid junction right here, and you can put a light in there and flick this as hard as you want, and it will not flicker. Saving that, you can also just replace the socket. However, sockets can tend to be pretty expensive, and quite frankly, I can do this to a socket as fast as I can change one. So it's up to you. This works really, really well. It doesn't impede with how you put the light in or out, and it'll work for years and years and years. The solder won't shrink and dry out and cause the same problem later. So it's a really good way to repair problems with flickering lights, which virtually all old machines have. So, okay, the other thing we'll talk about is cleaning your topside components before you put them back on. And this is kind of a separate step, separate process from getting the playfield surface ready. This can be done before you do all that. It can be done after. You can have someone else doing it concurrently. Everything else we told you was kind of a linear progression of how to go through to get the playfield to the point where it's ready. Now we got to have the topside components ready. And these are the kind of things that you're going to be dealing with. Your light guard plastics, that's the printed plastic with the game-specific artwork. Your posts and your lane guides. Metal, you're going to have screws. Your pop bumper rod and ring assembly. The ball arch deflector and runway arch. Those are the little guys on the older machines that, even on the newer machines, when it kicks out, there's a little metal piece that the ball hits so it doesn't hit the wood. And the deflector on the ball, manual ball lift games, you want to take that off and clean it. Your aprons, like I said before, you want to take those off, and you want to clean those because they're a dirt trap, and it's a very big area of your play field, actually, when you put it all back together, and you want that to look good as well. Also, your wire guides and your rollovers. This wire guide, I miswrote that. What I'm talking about, and I'll show you in a minute, is the little, I don't even know what the proper name for them is, the little metal strips that are nailed into the wood that surrounds the play field, and the ball will come down. And Gordo, what's the name for those? Do you even know what I'm talking about? Am I describing this ball at all?
I'm not sure.
Well, you know, it's like a lane right up against the play field wood will have a little metal piece, the curved piece where the ball will go down and kick back out. Well, we'll have a picture of one in a second. Someone tell me what they're actually called, because I just always call them metal things. And bumper caps. So you can actually, the wire guides, you can actually take out and buff those up, the little metal piece if you really want to, or just replace them if you really want things to look ridiculously good. So the main things you're going to be dealing with is buffing metal, cleaning plastic with Novus and Brilliantize, soaking plastics that don't have any artwork or printing on them in Mean Green. Soaking things in Mean Green is a miracle. It will take dirt out of every part of everything you immerse in it. And dealing with delicate surfaces so that you don't damage artwork on existing stuff, trying to clean it, because it's very easy to do in several areas. So what you're going to need is Mean Green, if you can find it. Luckily, it's pretty available here. A bowl or a jar, some rags, towels, Novus, Brilliantize, a buffer, if you're keen to go that far, and Q-tips. And we're not going to get into how to buff here either. You know, you can go figure that out and do it, because we could do a whole seminar on buffing. So, cleaning topside components. Posts, lane guides, skirts, and bumper bodies. None of them have printing on them, so you really should be replacing your skirts, quite frankly. And your bumper bodies, probably, but if they're not cracked or broken, you don't have to. But if you just drop all that stuff, and when I say posts, it's typically just the plastic posts is all I put in there. Just soak them in Mean Green overnight or for several hours. Get them out, wipe them off, put the post down on a towel so it can all run out, or you can even chase it out with a little alcohol in a bottle. But be careful with alcohol and plastic. It can cause a milky, filmy reaction that you can never get rid of. And then polishing all your clean plastic with Brilliantize. If you sit there and you polish, you squirt your Brilliantize on it, just follow directions on the bottle, and buff out each post. It's painful and it takes a long time, but it makes a difference when you're all done and you're putting it all back together. And even do it to your bumper bodies. Do it to anything that's visible. Make it look as good as possible. When you're doing bumper caps, printed flippers, anything with artwork on them, including your aprons, be very, very, very careful. It seems that the artwork is held on by the will of God. And if you don't exercise a lot of caution, I mean, really, water is almost too caustic in some cases, like especially for the aprons. Some of the old, like Gottlieb aprons, upper and lower aprons with very thin webbing, and you breathe on it and the webbing is gone. So you got to be very, very careful. Same with bumper caps. A good way to do it is just H2O or diluted simple green, and start with H2O. And like bumper caps, just very carefully try to clean them off. And you'll even look and you go, oh yeah, look, a little of the green's coming off. You got to be really, really careful. So, but it's all worth doing. Don't just wipe stuff down really quick. Get all the dirt out of there, because if you don't get all the dirt out of there, it's going to come back out onto your play field. So buffing, the things that we typically buff when we're going full tilt is the metal posts, you know, the nice little jewel posts, the two-part jewel posts. I take those and I've got a threaded rod and I just drop them on the threaded rod, so I put wing nuts on the end so I have like this cool looking scepter made out of those posts. And then I buff that whole thing like one piece. and they come out looking, you know, brand new and shiny and wonderful, and it's a very quick and easy way to astound and amaze your friends. Screw heads, again, you'll spend about 10 seconds on each screw head, and they will shine and look wonderful, and if you do one, you have to do them all, because if you don't do them all, it'll really show. And basically, the metal rail guides, maybe that's what they're called. Anyway, I did know at one point, because I wrote that. Anything that's visible, basically. Your runway arch, like I said before, your ball stick protector, your arch deflector, anything that you can see that's metal on the playfield. We even buff out the inner upper apron. It's usually a plated piece below the main apron that usually has a couple lights sticking up. We take that and we buff the top side because it increases the reflectivity and it makes it just a little bit more shiny and pretty and gives it a little bit more of an ooh-ah factor. So, and the metal rail guides makes a huge difference. You get the actual reflection in the playfield. If you go look at the Gigi that's over in our booth, go look at the metal rail guides and you see a really nice reflection of the playfield. And it just helps give it a more brilliant look. And then your wire guides, which are the little wire forms, and some mostly in the later games that like separate your out lane from your in lane, and they're just a little wire that's bent into and inserted down in. Pull those up, buff them out, put them back in. Sometimes you have to use a little glue when you put them back in, gel super glue put into the hole, not on the post. Again, always put it down inside the hole when you're using glue on a play field. And buff those out and put them in. And again, it's one of those little touches that really will make your play field stand apart. So here's the metal rail guides I was talking about. Here's before buffing. And you can see it's oxidized and looks crabby. And it's not a great picture, but here's after buffing. And you can see it's got a nice shine to it. It's got my fingerprints on it. But you can see the change there. And usually I don't do the final little buff out until I actually have nailed them back on. And something you're going to find, too, when you go to nail these back on, is that they don't want to stay real well. So you want to, like, maybe take the tip of a toothpick. You don't have to use any glue or anything. Just stick the very tip until it stops and then break it off before you put the nail back in, and you'll be fine. So now we're going to talk about problems, and I'm going to let Tyler tell you about that. We've got a few things you're going to run into here that make your life more difficult when dealing with your playfield, and we're going to try to help you get over those obstacles.
Jim?
Yes?
Are you guys using any kind of buffing compound, or is that just purely mechanical?
Oh, no, you have to use, four different wheels. We go from, I'll make this really quick, we go from what's called a sisal wheel, which is a rope wheel with a very coarse compound first. You got to be very careful with anything plated because it'll take the plating off. Then I move over to just a sewn, spiral sewn wheel with a slightly less coarse compound. Then I go to a rouge with a loose buff. And then I go to a jeweler's rouge with a loose buff. So you got to be patient, take it all steps. But if you don't know how to buff, learn how to buff. Don't buy a buffer and go nuts. You're going to impale your spouse or something. They're not toys, but they're wonderful things if you learn how to use them right. Anything else on that before I hand this over to Tyler for the problem?
Do you use any express air?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes you can't get things, you can't get reach areas. And, yeah, that's a good point, actually. If there's hard-to-reach areas and you need to get dirt out, and compressed air is a great way to do it. And you want to be careful with compressed air on the underside, just because if you try to, don't use too high of a pressure. You can mess a few little things up.
You can find stuff in the can, that works.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely adequate. Yeah, you don't need anything that's got higher pressure than that. But be careful with that, though, because if you use it too long, it starts, or you tilt the can and it doesn't have air, you start getting like almost a Freon. Come on, really, I'm sorry. You start getting like a Freon, kind of real cold, and you can start damaging your play field. So you don't want to do that. I'm sorry, I thought I had this on my brain. Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up. So, all right, I'm going to hand
it over
to
Tyler
now. Sorry,
yeah. You use ultrasonic cleaner, so it's like soap and mean green in that, or a simple.
No, I know what you're talking about, but no, everything really, mean green's pretty aggressive, and if you just leave it there, and what I'll do is I'll walk up every now and then, just kind of slosh the thing around, get some movement, and then, a lot of times, you just take it out, rinse it with water too, to get any excess mean green, and it really gets everything off of there. I mean, if you have an ultrasonic cleaner, I mean, sure.
Simple green and mean green, the same thing.
No,
they're different.
Mean green is
a very aggressive cleaner that evidently in some parts of the country it's very hard to find. But this is really great stuff. Household, too, it's great stuff. You can buy these at the dollar store, at least around here, for a dollar for this size bottle, which is a really good deal, actually. It works out to like $6 a gallon or something.
And that's
like
safe
that.
With plastics, you're saying, the mean green.
It's safe with non-printed plastics. Don't use it on any plastic artwork.
Right, but yeah. The subcoats and whatnot.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Pour some in a bowl. You don't dilute it at all. Dump your parts in and let them go.
So a couple problems that we run across with play fields are stripped holes, and you might find when you're depopping the play field, taking off the plastics, when you're taking off one of the screws, you're going to notice that it's really loose. But when you go back to put it together, you want to fix that stripped hole, and I'll go into that in a minute. Another problem is excessive clear coat. And another problem is the Mylar underneath the pop-up bumpers. First problem, your problems with your stripped holes. What basically that is when you're putting a screw in and it's just gonna keep going, it doesn't bite. What you wanna do, here's some pictures. What you want to do is take a toothpick. As you can see, we'll say that hole right there is stripped. And that's the bottom of a post right there. Here's a picture of me putting a little bit of glue at the end of
nice, nice
a
t-shirt,
toothpick.
By the way.
Oh, thanks. And you put a little bit of glue on the end of the toothpick, and you stick it in that stripped hole. And here's a picture of me just breaking it off. And if there's any more room for the excess toothpick, go ahead and stick that in too and break that off. And you just want to get it as flush to the play field as possible. Now when you go back to put that stripped screw in, it's going to grab the toothpick, and it's going to be nice and sturdy for you.
Here's actually the example of it's in there right now. You don't have to wait for the glue to dry. You can put the screw in there right away and then just let it sit, and it'll be fine. As soon as the glue sets up, you'll have a nice screw hole. And like here, if you do let it dry, sometimes there is a little bit sticking up. You can just take like some flush cutters and just kind of carefully snip it close. It'll make it easier to get the screw to start. So.
Sometimes we run across somehow, some way, it looks like somebody took some polyurethane and just dumped it on the play field. And you have an area where you have excessive polyurethane. And there's not that much you can do to it. What we do is we'll try and sand down that as much as possible and making sure that we do not bring up any of the artwork that's on there. And then we'll go back with some Novus and try and bring back the sheen. That. But there's it's really hard to deal with, and kind of minimal you can do to
it. Basically, if someone's done that, you're limited in what you can do. If you got lucky and they did it poorly and it was bad polyurethane and it's chipping and you can kind of flake it off, maybe. That happens sometimes. But basically, you're trying to minimize the impact of what someone did ill-advisedly.
Yeah. I don't know why they do it, but we run into some crazy stuff. And now we have the what you were talking about, sir, taking off the adhesive mylars that are under pop-up bumpers. Here's an example of a couple of them. What you want to do with that is take the heat gun and a plastic razor blade, and say that one of these are stuck right here and you want to remove it.
Or sometimes you get clear mylar down here, anywhere you find undesirable mylar.
Use your heat gun and heat it up and go back and forth. Be careful of not burning your finger. And you don't want to burn the wood. But it'll start peeling up a little bit, and that's when you take your plastic razor blade and get into it. Get into it and take the heat off And if you can, just grab that and pull it up. If you're lucky, you might get this whole thing off in 3 or 4 pieces. But typically, it takes about 15, 20 pieces. So just be cautious of burning your finger and burning the wood.
And try to scrape from the outside in if you can.
Yeah, outside in, definitely. And what's left is a bunch of that adhesive, the glue. And what you want to do is take something like this and be very careful. Well, this is a heavy-duty orange Power Plus. It's a degreaser, but it works on cleaning a lot of stuff. But I have cleaned a playfield one time using this, and I ruined the playfield, and the client was not very happy with me. So be very, very careful. Yeah, no, we'll see. What I do is maybe even tape off around that area just so you spray it lightly on there, because it really does work well in taking off adhesives. And then you go back with your plastic razor blade and just start gathering it and scooping it up. And then after that, you want to take either mean green or some simple green and spray it onto your cloth and just start taking it off from there. And it's a process. Sometimes you might have to do a couple of these.
Be really careful with that stuff, though. It can damage the paint. You gotta go slow.
And a lot of elbow grease.
I've had good luck with a product called Goof-Off for the adhesive removal.
Yeah, I think we have that, right?
Yeah. I use Goof-Off.
The group, I've had decent luck with it.
Yeah, this is will work on a wider range of adhesives, which is why we have it around. So we just use it on for this as well.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Goof-Off too. Be real careful with that. I mean, any solvent you use that's going to attack an adhesive is going to also attack your playfield. So just be really careful.
So yeah, just take your time, and eventually you'll get the. You'll get this off in pieces, and then you get the adhesive off. And then we come to warped plastics. You'll find warped plastics on a lot of old pinball machines, and Jim's going to talk about that.
Now, we do a lot of this, so we use this, this little dandy device, which is a heat press. You can also use just a regular standard oven. But you got to make sure that your thermometer in your oven works really well, or you have a thermometer you can put in your oven to make sure that you're at the right temperature, because once you go above the temperature for too long, say goodbye to your plastics. This works really well. Again, if you have a heat press, you can pick these up for a couple $100. They're not too bad. This one I think was $3-something, but you can get a little bit cheaper ones. And really you just need something where you can control the temperature and you can apply pressure. And this works really, really well. Again, if you get two pieces of good, like 3/16 or quarter inch glass that will fit in your oven, and you can set your oven at 200, that'll work too. But this, we're gonna try to do this on the fly, and I think I'm at the right temperature. It's dark and I'm blind, but I think so. So we'll kind of show you, if you can see the warp in there.
And this, or tin foil.
Normally you do want to use some tin foil that hasn't been crinkled. Due to bad planning, I don't have any with me, and it should be okay. But I do recommend you have some aluminum foil.
You want to put
the printed side, the side where the artwork is actually placed, not the viewable side, but the printed side, down. So your hot part is up. We're just going to slide that over, and we're going to clamp it down. And now we're going to time it, because you don't want to go too long. After about 3 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes or so, we should... see a pretty big improvement in that plastic.
Do you know what temperature you're using?
200. I think.
You hope.
I'm hoping. Yeah. It looks like it.
Fahrenheit?
Yes. So we'll let that sit for a few minutes. We'll come back to it in a couple minutes. Everybody help me remember that's happening. So also, let's talk about some other things that people like to gloss over because they think they're hard and complicated and don't want to deal with them. I'm here to tell you that they're not hard and complicated, and you will deal with them, or you will answer to me. I know. And the rewards are tremendous. So pop bumpers, don't ignore them. Don't leave them in your play field and think, they'll be fine. They're complicated to take apart. I got to unsolder the light socket. I don't want to do that. They'll be fine. They won't be fine. You're going to make everything else work great. Your pop-umpers aren't going to work great. And what's the point? It's a pinball machine. Pop-umpers are an integral part of most well-designed pinball machines. So take pictures, you know, as you take them apart. There's also some great resources on the web. And Steve Young actually produced a little sheet of a cutaway of a pop-umper that, if you're serious about working on pinball machines and pop-umpers, you should have that and be familiar with it. And quite frankly, pop-umpers aren't complicated. Everyone just thinks they are because you got to deal with both sides of the play field. They're really easy. They're really, really simple. And cleaner replace your... Yes?
Could I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Beyond taking pictures, if you haven't done one of these restorations before, and there's almost always two pop-umpers at least on a game.
Sure.
If you take that first one off, put it back together.
Excellent, yeah.
Set aside because you're going to need that as a template, or you might need
right.
that as a
template. Right. And I, you know, I'm always that's amazed... Yeah, that's a great idea. Anytime you're working on a pinball machine, if you have two of something, it's always a good idea to leave one of them assembled while you work on the other one. Pop bumpers, I've shown so many people how to do them, and they'll do a couple, and they'll come back the next day or later that day, and they'll just start putting them together wrong. And it's not as intuitive as I think, evidently. And you just got to pay attention and kind of go slow, and you'll be fine. But replace these or at least clean them. And you can actually buff these up really nice if you're careful. You can buff this edge up and give it a nice, really nice sheen. A lot of times you'll find your legs start getting a little bit wobbly. That's going to affect your play. It's gonna absorb energy. It's not going to be as clean of a pop. So, you know, replace them. You've gone to the trouble of taking them all apart. If there's any question, I'll put new ones in it.
How about this?
Let's do a check. Let's see. Uh-oh. That's not a good sign.
So I put 10
for let's see what we got here. See there? See how much better that looks now?
Have you tried that on 50s plastics?
Yes. Excellent question. But when I say yes, I really mean no. No. I've done it on 50s plastics, and it's a good idea when you get to this point. What I like to do is do something heavy, not hot. Just pull that cool flat. It helps a little bit. I'll turn this off now. But the 50s plastics, there's some that it's no problem, and there's some that if you do this, the whatever they use to print it, the ink or whatever, it gums up. And you can see, you can actually visually tell if you're familiar enough if it's that type of plastic. And there's just nothing you can do. I mean, it's just not, you're going to flatten it, but you're going to have a swirl of the colors of the artwork. Yeah, it's not going to work, basically. So you have to kind of, and some of the thinner, really thin plastics they had in the 50s, early 50s, a little touchier. You can do this, anything from pretty much the early 60s on, you're pretty safe as long as you're careful. But also, does that?
Yeah.
Okay. And any other questions on the plastic?
Okay. The oven process again.
Oven again, you want 200 degrees, don't go above that. In fact, 190, 195 is even a little safer. Get some pieces of glass cut that fit nicely in your oven. And make sure your oven has very good temperature control and that your thermometer, either within your oven, is good, or you have a thermometer you can put in to gauge the temperature, because once you go too far, it's over.
And then just the weight of the glass will...
Yeah, I mean, it can't hurt to put a little, some kind of weight on there to help push it down. I mean, this is actually quite a bit. I think I'd get like 60 PSI out of this. So
can
it works.
I make a suggestion that I think is the safest way if you're... and your glasses, sure. Direct sunlight and a couple
yeah.
sheets of glass.
That's I get really inconsistent results with that.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's very safe.
Yeah.
And actually, if you have a van, do that, put a sandwich between two pieces of glass and put it in the window of your van on a hot day. You know, and that'll actually, but check it often. You know, if you do the thing in the oven, check it often. You can always heat it some more. You can't unheat it and fix it if you go too far. So, but, you know, it's always good to go out on the floor and find people who are selling plastics for a dollar, any of these plastics, buy three or four of them, and intentionally go warp them, and then try to fix them before you start trying to do it on your regular play field. So get sacrificial parts. Well, no, honestly. And, you know, then you end up, like, look at that. Is that not a miracle? So that's how you flatten the plastics. Leave me alone. And anything else on the plastics? And flattening, or any suggestions? Anybody else got a fun way they do it? Gordo.
This is a little bit off topic, Jim, but a gentleman asked about 50s plastics, and you know, I've had some experience, both good and bad, with them. But one of the things that is a good thing to do in the interim, most of the plastics from the 50s games are now being reproduced, at least they've got them. But in the case of those that aren't, if you can borrow a decent set of plastics from someone and take good color Xerox of them and laminate those between two pieces of clear plastic, you have an acceptable alternative until such time as they actually reproduce.
Right, that's a good suggestion. And I don't know if tap plastics are prevalent throughout the country. We have them here, but they will actually, if you take the old plastic in and hand it to them, go, I need two clear pieces this thick that are just exactly this shape, they'll do it for you. Yeah. And it'll have a nice edge. It won't be cheap, but they'll do it for you, and then you can do your artwork and sandwich them together and be off and running. So yeah, that's a really good suggestion, actually. So, anything, if you know, like you said, if the reproduction's available, then it's a no-brainer. So okay, anybody else? Suggestions or questions? Okay. So back to the pop bumpers. Replace the light socket. They're kind of the most notorious light sockets, I think, on a pinball machine for not working well. Replace the springs, both the little skirt spring and the actual return spring on the for the yoke and plunger. Replace the sleeve and clean the plunger, and replace both yokes. I thought I had a yoke picture next, but I guess I don't. Anyway, replace both. If you don't know what a yoke is, come and talk to me, and I'll tell you. It's part of the pop bumper that's part of the bracket underneath, and it's a good thing to replace those.
Replace the fiber ones.
Fiber ones as soon as I replace the metal ones, because the plunger actually starts digging in to the fiber after a while. And you've got it apart, so they cost $1. So why not give Steve Young some business? So just don't ignore your pop bumpers. Same with your flippers. Flippers are an integral part of the game, unless it's a pre-flipper game. Just don't ignore them. Remove the bat and the shoe. Take the shoe shaft off from the pawls underneath. Pull them out. Clean or replace both bushings. Make sure the bushings are tight. Clean the shaft of the shoe, because that's what fits in the bushing and has to turn freely. So you want to make sure that's really clean. And you can actually, if it's not a printed flipper, throw the whole shoe and flipper thing in some mean green to let it soak. You know, check or replace springs if they're really new. I mean, you don't need to, but again, you've got everything apart. They're not that expensive. Replace the sleeves and clean the plungers, and check or adjust the end of stroke switches. And that's just a little switch that when the flipper goes all the way in, it opens a little bit to take the high power, adds a coil in to reduce the power so you don't burn up the coil. So those are like the key things you just don't want to ignore. And we tried to kind of stay away from obvious stuff. We're trying to kind of give you some tips and hints on stuff you might not know to do, but if you don't mention this stuff, it's like, wow, don't those guys work on their flippers or their pop bumpers? So, you know, don't ignore them. And feel free to come and ask for any other tips or anything on any of those or any of the components. And now that you've cleaned everything, you've touched up everything, you've buffed everything, you've reseated everything, you've pumped water-thin glue into everything, you're ready to repopulate. So what you'll need is a screwdriver or power driver. Post nut wrench, actually, you don't really need the repopulation, but some drivers, 5/16 and a quarter are very useful. A tack cloth. Tack cloth's a little waxy cloth that is very good. Painters use it a lot to take dust off after they sand it, but it's also very good for just picking up anything that's accumulating on your play field while you're putting it back together. So, and it's just, you go lightly and it just grabs it all. So, you know, get it up underneath the apron. Lights, rubbers, that we talked about before. The picks you took before you depopulated and while you depopulated. And patience. Exercise all the patience you have. And if you get frustrated, just walk away. Don't try to go fast or get angry and have the screwdriver slip and hit your play field, and then you have to punish your kids, and it's not a good place to go. So just use a lot of patience and go slowly, and you'll be fine. And then you'll have this. You'll have a Buckaroo that looks brand new, or a Central Park that looks brand new, or a Quick Draw. And back to our Buckaroo. So yeah, and you can see we've taken the time. This has all been buffed out. We even buffed the edges of this out. And these are your little metal posts that have all been buffed. So they're all bright and shiny. So yeah, and this is the arch deflector I was talking about that kicks the ball out that way. The runway arch, we even buff replace the ball gate and the return bracket. And the front of the return bracket, that little button, everything that shows. The glass channel, take it off and buff it. Or clean it. At least clean it. Because there's stuff up in there, and if you don't clean it, when you pull your glass out, it's going to drag stuff down on the play field. So take it apart and clean it. All the metal that returns your ball, in an automatic ball return game, take all that off, clean it, put it all back on. In a manual lift ball game, take the little trough off and clean it. It's a pain, but do it, because it's just going to carry the dirt back up onto your play field. So, any questions? Yes?
When you do wholesale touch-ups in the play field, how do you do dirt coat or
piling? Oh, there's just so much, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
We then will actually spray it. And we don't do automotive clear coat, but we do a lot of layers of water-based polyurethane. And it takes about, what would you say, it takes about 8 or 9 days to do it adequately, because you've got to do, you do several coats, let it sit overnight, sand, do several coats, let it sit overnight to actually to get the right effect. And yeah, that's only in the real, real extreme cases, and that's, we typically don't work with our own machines that way, because we don't, I don't invest in machines that need that typically. But customers will bring us stuff that's what's required and that's what they want done, so we will do that.
Spray gun for that, or?
No, just.
Comes in a can.
Just comes in a can, yeah. Yeah, so. Yes?
Last question, please.
All right.
So you prefer the gel glue to fill the inserts to the varathane that you've got on the system?
Compared to this, or the polyurethane?
Oh, well, we use water thin to fill the dish. The gel is used to make a barrier if the insert is shrunken and there's a gap in the wood.
Prefer the glue to the varathane.
The varathane is not going to, you can't really put a quarter inch of polyurethane in there and have it dry to a nice hard surface that's going to look good. I mean, it's not really its intention, it's more of a coating. And the super glue, the water synth super glue is really hard. And it really actually comes out nice and glossy. And it's going to be a much more permanent solution. Again, like we talked about earlier, I have never tried it. It might be worth trying, and there might be something out there that's far better than the super glue. And if anyone discovers something, please share it, because we're always willing to experiment and find out better ways. But right now, that's the best way we found. Yes, last question, because Ron's going
to
hit me.
I haven't tried it, but I do have that problem to solve. I would use a water-based paraffin, but I haven't tried it. So I don't know.
Well, try and get back to me. I'd be interested.
The suggestion was the water base, because the other stuff will come, turn it.
Yeah, the oil base will yellow on you.
Get too much. So yeah. It's the water base, but I'll try to.
Yeah, well, or try the water base too. Or Mark, try the water base and let me know.
I'm about to. That's why I asked.
Okay, yeah. I'd be very curious. Well, thank you all for coming out. Really appreciate it. And make sure you go check out the Grand Champion so you can see the example of what we're talking about now, the fixing the dish inserts. Feel free to ask Tyler or Amy, especially Tyler, any questions you have about any of the topics we discussed. And go play a lot of pinball and enjoy the show. And thanks for coming. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Destroy that.